This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. It's April 5th, 2016. This is Sophia Ray, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. Please participate during the show by calling in questions for our guests, toll-free in Canada and the U.S. at 1-888-429-5471. The People Speak airs every Tuesday for 1 hour. For more information on The People Speak, please log in to bbsradio.com. Navigate to Station 2 and look for The People Speak on the schedule on every Tuesday. Tonight's guest is a special guest, one who is lucky to be alive. Or is he alive? His name is Edward Jones. He is a philosopher and an author of a handful of books. He has many publications out, and today he's here with us to speak about his experience with death and transformation. Edward Jones, welcome to The People Speak.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Well, it's good to have you here. It's good to hear you for a dead man. You wrote a book. And in this book, which is called, by the way, let's see here. This book is, I can't find it. Oh, How My Death Revealed the Secret to Life. That's a very interesting title there. But I have to know, was your death medically confirmed by medical professionals?
No, it wouldn't be a death if that were the case. If there's any interference in it, it cannot be a death.
Really? Explain that a little more.
Well, it interrupts the natural experience of death, of actually dying. If there's any sort of thing calling you away, any movement towards or away from death would remove the experience of death. Unless, of course, there was some sort of traumatic thing like a plane crash or he got shot or something. In my case, it's simply a death of myself.
Well, let's give our listeners an idea of an experience that we're talking about here. And you had written about one, which you mentioned in your book that you dropped your wife off to go be with another man. And you sent your son like 5 doors down. And then after that, you like screamed for like 10 minutes or so. And then what happened?
Well, I didn't drop her off to go be with another man. I dropped off for her to go to be with another man. I thought I'd clear that up. Well, it's difficult to tell this whole story in a short period of time, but it was the final thread of a constant failure that I have experienced. I had experienced, that was 37 years ago. Everything on planet Earth I had failed at, with the exception of being a husband. And then when that happened, then that was the final, I guess you could call it the final straw, you know, 36 years of failing, and then finally the last thing is, if anybody knows what a final straw does, the camel can have 100 bales of straw on top of him, but that final little thing is just too much weight and it collapses. And that's essentially what happened, although there's no manner in which to describe this that can be assimilated, if you will, from the standpoint of knowledge, because there's no language for it.
In speaking of language, let's go here. One of your publications that I read was about the five words. And in your book also, How My Death Revealed the Secret to Life, I want to quote something. It was an author's note here. And here I read, words have a life of their own. And most words have trapped us in already existing meanings. Through the meaning, words have been given. And through our acceptance of them, they guide our lives. If we can catch these words as we use them, we will begin to see the manner in which they trap us. Now, can you tell me, Mr. Jones, how do words, you know, how are they affect death? Or how are they, have they affected your death?
Well, you kind of took a turn there when you said affected death. Words affect our way of being from the beginning. When we learn the first word, normally it's advertised that most babies learn the word mama first. And if they learn the word father first, the baby doesn't live any longer. That was a joke. So it has to do with the meaning of the word already being on our planet before we are born into it. Sort of like the meaning of the word mother, meaning a caretaker and all of the things that's there, and the word father and any word that you pick out that has some force to it has already been invented. It's already on the planet, already has a meaning. All we have to do is learn the meaning of it, and then we are lost in that word. Such a word as religion or God or Muslim or Catholic or Republican or Democrat, all of those things are words that, in those cases, labels, but words that we can get lost in. And then afterwards, we become at the effect of those words.
Words to you seem to be a big part of your life. You have eliminated words, 5 of them to be exact. And for some reason, as I was reading a lot of your writings, 5 is a big number for you. You have 5 near-death experiences, these 5 major words for you. I have 5 doors down, you sent your son. And you seem to be, I don't know if you are involving yourself in this struggle number 5, or if it's just a number that's just clouding you.
Hey, look at the bright side. I didn't have 5 wives.
True. You only had one, right? Just one?
Exactly. One wife and one child was enough to teach me the stupidity of marriage and childbirth, both. That was 37 years ago. But the number 5 doesn't have any meaning to me other than the amount of times perhaps that something happens. If there was a number that had any meaning, it would be number 7, which is what I wore in most of my childhood and on through my high school days of playing sports. But no, the number 5 only has meaning to me as to the amount of time something happened. Although 5 words, that's not actually a book. 5 words that control our lives I don't know what you call that. It's an article.
I just call it a publication, just, you know, like an essay. And by the way, and for those who are interested in these publications and books that can be found online, you can go to anewconsciousness.org or selftransformation.org. Again, anewconsciousness.org and selftransformation.org. And there's numerous publications or essays that are there, and 5 of its books. And now, are all your books available online?
They are, yes. They're actually available in two different areas. One is a paid-for area, and then there's a free area that I just give them away. As much as it probably sounds strange to say, Sophia, for the most part, people do not have any care or concern about peace on Earth. They care nothing.
And is this your theory that there about love? Now tell me, what is love to you? And I know you feel like there's a lost meaning there, and that's why you feel a void of love on earth. But do you believe that love is in existence, and obviously not on earth? And also, I don't want to make it too complex for you, but do you think caring is more powerful than love?
Well, caring, well, you'd have to stop and perhaps consider that two things cannot occupy the same space at the same time. And on planet Earth...
But there's like 7 billion people on Earth, and Earth has to be one space.
Exactly. And the core of our consciousness today is violence. If you need proof of that, who would need proof of it? But if you do, look at what we've been in on our planet, from one world war to another war to another war. It's been since our inception, there has been nothing but wars. So
are you saying that conscious, we're at war?
Yes, we are a conscious being that is violent. What I speak of, you could say, is the first ever evolution of the human brain. It means to say that violence has been eliminated. It has been erased from the consciousness of our planet. Therefore, the wars, the religions, the stupidity of our planet will disappear, and there will be internal and world peace.
So, what kind of death do we have to experience to become at peace in the entire world?
The lie. We must each die to the lie. The manner in which you die to the lie is you realize that what you have been living is a lie. We have, each and every one of us, been living a lie. We have been living in an illusion, there's another word, illusory, rather than illusion, illusory world of violence,
illusionary
killing.
Illusionary world.
Yes. And it's led by religions, but even before religion, it's led by belief. It just happens that religion is the world's largest belief, and only...
Okay, let me rephrase this. How do we become dead to a lie that is taught to us? It seems that we are taught this lie, you know, and this is what the whole programming in the USA of going to school. We send our kids off to go to school so they can, you know, be programmed by the lie. And this is a reprogramming because, you know, my parents were taught with, you know, of lies, and they taught me and so on and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
So how do we die if we are continuously taught the lie? To ourselves more. We lie to ourselves more, correct?
Correct. While it may seem difficult, it's actually a rather easy answer that I have, which is to realize that our parents' world was a world of complete and total insanity. It was a world of fighting, killing, maimings, and murders, and rapes, and all of that sort of thing. And as we were born, just as when our parents were born, and their parents, on back and on back, we each were, let's call it, forced to accept that world. That happens before the age of 4. So actually, each one of us, before the age of 4, becomes a robot. We actually become, at the effect of the insanity of our planet, before we're 4 years of age, before we can even remember that we did it, we did it. I kind of like that BBS radio thing with a little child with the, I don't know if you folks can see that or not, but it's got a child with earphones on. And that's very indicative of what I'm speaking of here. The child is born perfect, and then we force them into the insanity of our parents' world. I am here suggesting that we do not need to continue the insanity of our parents' world. All we need to do is to see that it's insane.
Okay, you talk about our planet, Now, how can we be concerned and care for our planet when we have never seen a real picture of our planet, when we have been taught what our planet looks like, a lie? You know, they say that our planet looks like this and like that, but in reality, if there is such a thing of reality, then how can we care for something that we are part of and we can't see? But we know we're doing something wrong, and if that's a word that I should be careful of using, because that's one of the words in your five words to, you know, eliminate if possible from your vocabulary, right and wrong. But anyways, how can I, you know, be in service for the planet if I've been taught everything I've been taught about my planet is a lie?
Well, you sort of answered your question there. The actual truth of it is, Sophia, all you need to realize is everything you've been taught is a lie. But it gets a lot greater than that. By greater, I mean larger than that. Because afterwards, then you took the lie and you ran with it. And if you were so, pardon me if I offend somebody, so damn dumb, you have a child, and you are going to force the same stupidity that was forced on you onto your children. Now, the reason I say that is because that's been happening for thousands and thousands of years. The past generations force their insanity on us, then we accept it. And once we accept it, world wars are inevitable. They will come about. The greatest insanities will continue. The greatest insanities we have on planet Earth is religions and gods and calling ourselves men and women. And all of the insanity of our parents' world, we make our own insanity.
You have a glossary of words, and you're not trying to change the meaning of these words, but these words seem to be coming from a more of a subjective point of view from yourself and from your experience is what I'm picking up here. Now, can you tell me, or not tell me, but our listeners, can you, what a man and a woman means to you from this glossary? But if you can't remember, you name it as a man, a figment, image, and projection. And you, in the same way with the woman.
Exactly.
And so where does that perception come from?
Well, if you don't mind me making you really angry, I don't speak in perception. I speak in truth, universal truth. If you were to go out to the street, Sophia, or if anybody listening to this radio station were to go out on the street after listening to it and say, hey, what is a real man? Or, hey, what is a real woman? And if they were to ask that question of 10 people or 100 people, they would either get 10 or 100 different answers. There is really no definition. I have heard real men get on their knees and pray to God. Real men go to war and kill people. Real men. So there is no real actual definition for a man or a woman. Now, if someone says to you, Sophia, are you a female? You, if you had enough nerve or if you cared enough to do so, you could actually prove it, couldn't you? In a physical sense, you could prove that you're a female, as could any male individual prove that they are a male. But if you ask somebody if you're a man or a woman, then you have a whole new can of worms, because man and woman is an illusion. There isn't any real, there aren't any real men or women, at least as in being able to define them.
You use a phrase in your book, and by the way, for those who are just now tuning in to The People Speak, this is Sophia Ray, and we are here with Edward Jones, and we're talking about self-transformation, a new consciousness, his near-death or death experiences. And I want to know here, Edward Jones, you use something I've never heard of. And it's in here, I quote, thinking is thinking us, unquote. What does that mean?
That means that when we are born, we are forced into a world that has words that already have an existing energy, and we accept that existing energy. Then we accept the belief around it, which what we end up with is thinking is thinking us. We're not doing the thinking. Our belief is doing the thinking. Look at the Christians. Look at the religions. Look at all the nonsense that's going on today. They go to church on Sunday, pray, and Monday through Friday, they kill, maim, and murder each other. There's nothing except thinking, thinking us. We are not.
You talk about action. Where's the action coming from? Is it coming from the words? Is it coming from the thought? Where's it coming from?
Well, it's a little bit of a difficult question to answer because really there is no action. We don't have any actions on planet Earth any longer. We have reactions. All we have are reactions to words, reactions to people who use words. We have reactions to people who call us stupid or call us dumb or call us idiots or not that I would do anything like that. So we really don't have any actions. We only have reactions. That's why I suggest very strongly, and actually it's true, that thinking is thinking us. It is our belief that is thinking us. It's not us doing the thinking.
So it's not us doing the thinking. So think but don't be the thinker would be the, almost the equivalent of us not doing the thinking, but thought alone is thought thinking.
Yes.
That's very confusing.
Yes.
I have no idea what I just said. So let's just forget about that. But I want to know, so you believe that there are power in words. And so do you believe that this power in words can be used, let's say, for instance, to destroy? Or could they even be used to heal?
Well, more so to destroy. And if you could, if you would consider that the individual you are having a conversation with does not have any belief, including that the individual you're speaking with does not have any belief. I mean, I don't even believe that. I don't ever believe anything that I say or anyone else. However,
why is it? Can you explain why that is?
Well, because if you believe something, then the belief begins to live you. If you believe you're a Christian, then you got to believe that that snakes can talk and all that nonsense. If you believe you're a Republican, then you have to go with the Republican. I'm talking here now in America, or it's kind of the same thing throughout our world. Once a belief is held in the mind, the belief itself does your thinking for you. There's no longer a live human being doing the thinking. It is the belief.
Well, you're not even thinking at that point. You kind of set yourself in stone and you kind of molded there. And so you don't move from that point of belief, correct? And that's where the trap comes in?
You are insightful. Exactly. That's exactly what happens. And here's the real problem with it. The longer a belief is held, the more entrapped you become in the belief. But it's even worse than that. If you believe something that, let's say in the Christian faith, they talk about Jesus dying 2,000 years ago. If you believe in that, then all that's going to happen is a repeat of the last 2,000 years. That is going to be exactly what happens because you believe it. And what you believe manifests itself on planet Earth. That's why we've been in wars continually, well, at least for the 2,000 years, and who knows before that.
Let me ask you one thing. I have to know this. If you could replace a word for belief, what word would you substitute it?
Possibility.
Possibility. Because therefore then you leave a room for anything to be impossible, even the impossible, correct?
Correct. And if there's going to be any difference made on our planet today, it's going to come from the impossibility. What I've been doing for 37 years is impossible. It cannot be done. I am seeing if words can actually affect someone in a function of transforming their life. That is impossible to do. So what I have been doing for 37 years is that. I've been doing the thing that's impossible to do. And I am delighted to announce that I'm failing miserably.
Edward, we have Nader that's calling in. Do you want to take the call from Nader?
Surely.
All right, put him on. And Nader, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks, Sophia.
Where are you calling in from, Nader?
California.
Okay, go ahead.
My question to you is, having the near-death experience, did you witness anything as far as a supernatural entity, or I missed the beginning half of the show, so I'm trying to figure out where you're coming from on this, because your near-death experience must have led you somewhere.
Well, surely. Firstly, I might gently correct you or suggest that I didn't have any near-death experience. That implies coming close to death, but not dying. In that sense, the mind continues to work. You might have a vision of God or a vision of angels or music, or perhaps a conversation that says, "You're not ready, my son, please go back." That's what you could call a near-death experience. A death experience is dead. There can be no mental acuity in a dead person. They can't see any God or any music or anything after death. However, that is the space where intelligence is. Intelligence lives in the space of the unknown, and of course death is the unknown. I do appreciate your question, and I understand you came in late, so you didn't really have although most people do, or at least a lot of people do, kind of confuse what I talk about. I don't talk about a near-death experience, because that's coming close to death. If you actually experience a death, well, then that's a rather huge distinction.
All right, that's why
it seems like this entire
question,
world
so
is
to be clarified. Sorry, Sophia. Oop. Go ahead.
We are both talking, so I don't know what happened.
Nader, repeat yourself again, please.
Okay, I was saying that's why I asked you the question. I wanted more clarification on your purposing of the thought and your purposing of the death experience. And I just wanted the audience to understand the clarity of it. Go ahead, Sophia, all yours. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you for your question.
Can you clarify? Can you bring any clarification? You know, what happens is when we're not clear and we don't have a very clear understanding, that's where, frustration arises and anger comes up and then hatred comes out of all of it. So let's try to, have a clear understanding of you, because I think that a lot of people misunderstand you and therefore they don't. Do you feel like you're misunderstood when you're not clearly understood?
Well, understanding is a booby prize. Understanding is the highest form that thought can reach. It is the Einsteins, it's the people at the top of thought. However, the space I'm speaking from starts where understanding dies. In other words, it's a quantum leap or a quantum movement off of understanding. So it has no relationship to understanding at all, because it's, as much as I hate to say it because I'll get in trouble, it has to do with intelligence, not knowledge.
So to you, what does intelligence mean?
Essentially, if intelligence and or love, which is the same thing, were ever to manifest on planet Earth, there would be no war. There would be no fightings and killings and maimings and raping of women. There would be no religions and the ridiculous Republican and Democratic nonsense we have going on in America. There wouldn't even be an Americans. There would be only planet Earth folks who care to actually interact and get along with one another.
Part of perhaps then what we are experiencing now over the world is too much intelligence, an overload of intelligence.
Well, if you actually create the distinction between what is intelligence and what is knowledge, you'll discover that we are a world filled with absolute insane knowledge, knowledge on top of knowledge on top of knowledge. And intelligence is the only thing that's going to pull us out of reducing our planet to no human beings. The ending of the experiment, as Bucky Fuller said, ending the experiment are called life on planet Earth. As long as knowledge is in charge, if you will, we'll have wars, we'll have religions, we'll have Democrats, we'll have Republicans, we'll have men and we'll have women. We'll have people who die inside.
Maybe we'll even have men. But on that note, let me take us into a break really quick, and then we'll come back and we'll start off where we left off. Stick with us, and we'll be right back with Edward Jones.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we are back. This is Sophia Ray on The People Speak, and we are here with our guest, Edward Jones, author, philosopher, and we're talking about near-death experience, self-transformation, a new consciousness. Yeah. Edward, are you ready?
No, I'm Edward.
Yes, you are. You are Edward. So, where were we? Do you remember? Can you recall? You were ranting on about religion, men having men. I mean, men having women.
I wasn't saying anything about that. I was talking about, yes, men and women and the labels that we become. And once we become the label, then, of course, the label thinks for us. That's where my statement called thinking is thinking us comes from. The interesting thing about that statement, Sophia, is the more a person is being thought by its thoughts, the more the person will argue that it's not being thought by its thought. Do you see what I'm saying? If someone were to hear that and they were to say, well, wait a minute, I wonder if that's true, then that person is beginning to break loose from the fact that thinking is thinking them. Does that make any sense?
I think I'm not thinking. Sense. That's, you know, sense is something else. What is sense? What is sense? Other, you know, can you tell me, define sense for me in your, in how you see it or how you feel it?
Are you saying the word sense, as in sense or sensory?
Sensory.
That's a whole different line of conversation, because sense has to do with ears, eyes, nose, mouth, our entire
body. But it has a lot to do with understanding.
Well, sense really leaves understanding. Understanding is the highest form thought can take. Actually, thought or understanding defeats sense. It makes it dull, if you will, because we begin to explain, well, here's what a, well, you can see it in our schools today. In our day, when somebody shook their foot or was kind of nervous in class, they called them hyper or kind of nervous people. Today, they call them, what do they call them? HPD, DS, or I don't know what all the new
post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah, all of the new excuses for the same old thing. So sense has to do with the ability to see our world as it is outside of our thoughts and our understanding.
Now, let me, am I right when I say that I don't think you believe in reality?
Well, what is belief? Belief is something only nutcases do.
Okay. So therefore there is no reality in your world. Am I right or am I wrong? Oh, wait. Let me try to eliminate those two words there. Is there a possibility that there is a reality?
Well, of course there's that stuff out there that's called grass. There's the thing out there called trees. There's a thing we live in called a house. There's even this thing we talk on called a computer. Those are all realities. The illusion starts when we start talking about a man or a woman or any kind of a belief system.
And so the belief systems, as in there's many, they pile on top of one another. Well, let me take another turn here. And you speak of a new consciousness. You speak of self-transformation. And if those two were attained, and they go hand in hand, I am assuming, how would the planet benefit from this?
Well, again, the largest benefit would be the ending of war, but that would come through by the ending of religion and the ending of belief and the ending of all of the insanities that our parents have forced
on. The
ending
of government, perhaps.
It would be, well, certainly the manner in which the United States governs themselves would disappear. I mean, we live in a country that was formulated and the rules written, if you allow the word rules, by old white men who owned slaves and traded slaves. All during the day, they wrote about the freedom of mankind, and at night, they traded their slaves, sold their slaves, and should I say, this is a radio show, I can't say they slept with their slaves, but obviously they did. Ask Thomas Jefferson.
Are you sure they didn't sleep at this place?
Jefferson had 128 slaves, and according to a lot of the stuff you see today, there's still a lot of their his relatives today coming along. And of course, I think, I don't know how many Washington had. He had a lot more slaves, I think, than Jefferson. But when you think about it, those are the people who wrote our Constitution. They're the people who wrote the manner in which our world was, our country here in the United States was going to be ruled, and they were slave owners and slave traders. And I dare say, well, the rest of it is kind of understood.
Mm-hmm. Bob, I want to quote something that was the very last paragraph of Five Words That Control Your Life and What You Can Do About Them. And it kind of, you know, goes with what I had read earlier. And it goes like this. Please do look at the words you use and the manner in which you use them, because otherwise you will remain trapped in words. There is the possibility for you to extract yourself from a trap that perhaps you don't even know you are in. We are 6.8 billion robots trapped in language. If we are ever to be free, it will come through extracting ourselves from the trap of words. The thought that is thinking us. Now, we are robots. Where did language come from?
Well, that's pretty easily answered. Obviously, it was invented as we went along. They're coming after me. I'll hang up. Marilyn, take it out of here, please. It's the plumber guy.
Right there.
So, where was I? They're coming to take me away, so I had to escape.
And you know what? You actually been in a position like that before, Edward. Do you care to share that experience, what that was like when your brother and you called her Becky, even though I believe that's not her name, and they actually came and took you away almost literally, right?
Well, yes, there was a group. My two brothers are both in the atheist vernacular, they call them Jesus freaks, but they were born again Christians, and they came to my house with recorders, and they asked me what I thought about God, and of course, if you've listened to me very long, you know the answer that I gave when I said that God was an illusion and responsible for the killings and maimings and murders and all the wars on planet Earth came from there. Mm-hmm. Well, they took that recording to the judge, and the judge said, "He'll come to judge." So they gave me a room and board for 40 some days.
And how long ago was this? This was quite some decades ago. And how long ago was that?
Well, that was a long time. That was 30, I don't know. This whole experience of transformation happened 37 years ago, and that was sometime after that. There isn't any
now,
sort of, go ahead.
Were you a repetitive patient, or was that your only time?
Well, I'd never been there before. Are you saying that I was in and out of there?
I'm asking.
Yeah, that was the only time. It was an interesting experience. A little funny story. Before I went in, before they introduced me to all those people. By the way, the craziest people in that place were the ones taking care of us. The same ones were the ones in there. But before then, people would see me on the street, and they would say hello. They'd say, "Hey, how are you?" I'd say, "Perfect," and they would look back at me and they would kind of smile. Well, when the judge said, "If you don't believe in God, then you need to be in a safer place," people would walk by me in there and they would say, "How are you?" And I'd say, "Oops, I don't think this is the place to say I'm perfect." So for a while, I dropped that completely, saying that I am perfect. But one day, one of the nurses called me over and she said, "Edward, I've been watching you interact with these other people. Just about everything you say is perfect. Can you tell me why?" And I said, I better walk away from that question.
Interesting, because your perfect is flawed.
All
right?
Perfect, flawed.
Perfect,
sure.
Is like it has flaws in it. Is that right or wrong? Oh, wait, let me eliminate those two words.
Well, now, yeah, there is no such thing.
Why am I doing this with the right and wrong? Right and wrong is one of those five words. Can you explain, you know, why right and wrong should be eliminated?
Well, there isn't any such thing as right or wrong. There isn't any such thing as good or bad. Those are all religious things to control us by. So it's actual silliness to have those things. But getting back to the definition, if you will, of perfect. My definition of perfect is, in order to be perfect, you need to have one part of everything that is available on planet Earth. And of course, one part that is on planet Earth is a flaw. Distinction is, if you are perfect, then your flaw shows up quite readily and it's right there for you to observe it. And then the observation of that flaw creates a new perfect. Pretty simple, isn't it?
Okay, perfect. That is perfect. Edward, what do you want us to know? I want to know, before I ask you this, I want to know, what is your life purpose? What is your life purpose out here? Are you doing it?
I am, actually, yes. The thing I you mentioned the thing that my death unveiled or revealed to me was the secret to life. And is the secret to life is as old as life can be. However, it's just as hidden today as it was thousands of years ago. The secret to life is simply speaking the truth. However, it's speaking the truth in a baby's voice, in a tiny little child. For instance, the manner in which a child sees the world is what I'm talking about. It has to do with seeing things clearly without understanding, without all of the insanity that our parents force on us.
Edward, we have another caller. I'm going to put Mike through. Go ahead, Mike. Where are you calling in from?
Hi, thank you very much. This is Mike in California, and my ears perked up when the guest, Edward, said that there is no such thing as good and evil or right and wrong. That is something that I've always said is true if you're not human. In nature, when the white shark eats the baby seal, it's just nature. But when a human kills another human, that's wrong, because we are born with a set of morals. That's the way I feel. I think humans feel that within themselves. We have that sense of awareness. I'd like him to comment on that.
If I can go real slowly here, Mike, I appreciate the answer. Or the question. The thing I speak of is the transformation of humans on planet Earth. In essence, if you will, if you'll allow me to be a little silly. Oh, wait a minute. I've been a little silly for about 48 minutes, haven't I? There are no real human beings on planet Earth. There are only people. Now, people can kill one another. People can kill because they think they're killing one another, when actually they're killing themselves. There's only one person or one human on planet Earth. And if we become a human, then the killing of ourself would end instantly. But here's a, I don't want to shock people or have people think that I'm crazy. There was a lot. If we were actually to end the killing of ourself, to transform ourself, then our planet completely would transform. There would be no more whales eating the seal or the lion. There would be no more eating to live. All of that would, that's what the evolution that I speak of is. It's the evolution of planet Earth, or the evolution of people into human beings. Human beings.
I would like to follow that up. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, you know, the problem with this is there's too much hypothesizing or words or intellectualization. Let me put it to you plainly. You have a wife, or you have someone you love, Edward. I take a gun, I point it at her, and shoot her. Are you going to tell me that is not evil, and that you will not cry, and that you will not wish? In fact, if you had a gun, you might even be tempted to shoot me before I shoot her, because you would consider it evil.
Allow me, if you will, to answer that question in a bit of a different way. That which I am would preclude the possibility for you to do what you just said you could do, because the moment you picked the gun up and presented it as though you're pointing at her, she would not be there. We would be out of harm's way, but we wouldn't be out of harm's way by using a gun or some form of violence back at you. We would leave you as your violence. Because look, if I, let's take your suggestion here, Mike. Let's say that you did that, although this really hurts me to even say it, to even talk this crazy. But let's say that you were able to level a gun at Marilyn, which you wouldn't actually be able to do. And let's say I did then shoot you, then I would be far greater a violent entity than you. I would then take my violence and put that into the planet. Therefore, the planet would be far greater a violent place to live in because I killed you. So the greatest incentive...
Violence is wrong. That's the question. Is violence wrong? We're talking about morality here. Is violence wrong?
There's no such thing as wrong. Violence is violence. Violence is killing.
But you wouldn't prefer not to have violence, right? I mean, Edward, if I kidnap you, tie you to a chair, and torture you, believe me, I can make you say, yes, there's a good and evil. Stop. Just anything, right? Would you concede that?
Well, if you need it to be conceded to, then I'll concede. However,
thank you very much.
It's still a lie.
All right. I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You do tend to go by language, you know. You're careful on the words you use, how you speak, but you love the word nutcase, and I don't think you have any, you know. Do you call yourself a nutcase more than anybody else? And then that's probably why you call, you know, we are nutcases, and I think that's actually a good thing in a way, because, you know, we're actually shielded from the ignorance, you know, from the nutshell. But I have to ask you, Edward, language, you think English language causes more harm than any other language out there?
Only because it's more universally used than, let's say, Urdu or Chinese or Japanese, whatever all those other languages are. So from that standpoint, yes, the English language is a hugely violent form of conversation. It's infused with all the violence on our planet. If you listen to religious people, if you listen to Democratic people and Republican people, they have all of the buzzwords. They have all of the insanity already built in, and we're so dumb we fall for the insanity.
So basically, we just kind of follow without questioning. We don't question, you know, what these words mean. And we don't really, you know, typically question people in power. And I think it's come from fear. And I haven't even heard of you speak of fear yet. And, you know, I'm interested in what you think of fear.
Firstly, I must say that you are doing a really good job of interviewing. This is not an easy domain of conversation to have, Sophia. So you're really doing well. I was going to use the word surprise. I'm delighted. I'll use that word instead. So fear, I'm afraid I'm not afraid of anything. Fear is only the fear of death. If you get over the fear of death, then no nutcase on planet Earth can scare you about anything. They can be like that idiot nutcase Mike. I thought I'd throw something out there for him that talks about putting a gun to somebody's head. That doesn't scare me at all.
Let's forget about that. You know, we are coming to the end of the show.
Okay.
And I think, you know, if you're more important, you know, you're a very important guest on this show. And I want, is there any messages that you want people to hear from you? You know, now is the time.
I don't know of anything that I could say other than what I've said in 55 minutes that would cause people to have more of an interest in what I say. But most people listen already knowing what they're listening to, if you will.
But on that note, thank you, Mr. Edward Jones, for being on the People Speak tonight. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in to the People Speak. I want to give a big thanks to Don Newsome, our engineer, and another thanks to Mike Kim, our producer. So time is up for tonight. Be part of the change for humanity and our planet. Let us unite through love and light. Be good to one another, and good night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.